you hear these stories about guys like LeBron who are clearly dedicating all hours to performance, not just that moment in the gym, the way they're thinking about sleep, the way they're thinking about immediately following the game. The work that, say, LeBron and Mike do together, I think is way beyond what other athletes are doing.
This is Tectonics, the podcast focused on the people and passion at the intersection of technology and health.
Sometimes the best ideas evolve from personal experience. Will Ahmed turned his quest for personal squash supremacy into a business that uses wearables to enable pro athletes to perform at their best. Whoop, his company, focuses on world champions, not weekend warriors, and lessons are there to be learned for healthcare.
This is Tectonics. I'm David Chaiwitz.
And I'm Lisa Soonan.
The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Oh, my God. It's a heartbreaker watching the Cavaliers kill the Warriors.
Oh, it was totally brutal. It was terrible to watch.
And the emotions for LeBron James, who delivers on his promise to come home and bring a championship to his beloved hometown.
Yeah, I want to be down on the floor crying right next to LeBron. You know, so much emphasis has been placed on fitness and wearables over the last 5 years, and much has been made of whether these trackers can translate to better health or are just there to make people feel a sense of accomplishment. In their quest to be taken seriously, most of the focus has been on the consumer-directed products. But there's a whole other world of wearables out there used by elite athletes like LeBron, who are quietly tracking and counting to maximize performance. It's worth noting that the emphasis on measurement and data in sports is so far ahead of what it is in medicine, and yet the results in both fields are measured in dollars.
And life saved.
So Will Ahmed, who's captain of the Harvard squash team when he came when he came up with the business plan for Whoop, he was frustrated that even when training at his best, he couldn't correlate that to best performance. He watched teammates accuse each other of not going hard enough, but felt there was data that could tell the truth of the answer. So Will abandoned his long-planned path towards the world of finance and waded into the world of next-generation Moneyball, the use of measurement to maximize fitness, performance, and outcome. Today, Whoop works with the Cleveland Cavaliers, Michael Phelps, the U.S. Olympic team athletes, and many others. And Will, it's so great to have you here. Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
So Will, you're one of those 20-something tech founders recently out of school, but came out of it like a rocket with a new idea and a company. How did you end up in this place and not wearing a suit at a hedge fund?
Well, you know, I think I was a little bit naive and I didn't quite know what I was getting myself into, but
that always helps.
But I was really passionate about solving a problem that I think applies to elite athletes, which is how to understand the body. And for me, it was doing a lot of physiology research while I was at Harvard, meeting with a bunch of cardiologists and physiologists, you know, trying to identify how you can solve problems like overtraining, undertraining, misinterpreting fitness peaks, preventing injuries.
So this isn't exactly a new area. I mean, the idea, aren't there a number of sort of studies for the centers for the study of human performance?
There are. I mean,
I think Stanford has a center. I think there's a center, the Pendleton Center, right? I mean, I feel like there's. I remember I was doing some pharma research on muscle, and then I remember, you know, surprised by the extent of interest. Not necessarily surprised, but I was really struck by how many even leading academic centers seem to have centers for human performance and seem to be really a huge focus on measuring these physiological parameters.
That's true. I think the flaw, unfortunately, in exercise physiology to date is just how limited the data sets are. So, you know, when I was doing all this physiology research, like I would read a study that was on 20 athletes collecting data points twice a day over the course of 2 weeks, you know, and some of the best cardiologists in the country were making conclusions about what that data meant. And mind you, that's sort of some of the leading information on understanding the body. And so for me, it was like, you know, aren't we at this point in time where you can collect an enormous amount of data on the body at a cost that, you know, previously was unthought of? You know, shouldn't we be able to really understand the body? And furthermore, why isn't there technology on the market that's monitoring all these things that really matter?
So how do you figure out what really matters? So when you got into this, it sounds like you really were motivated by a personal experience. You're trying to essentially optimize your training regimen so that you perform at the highest level when you were playing squash. What was a specific example of some parameter or something that you really wanted to study that you're wondering, am I overtraining, am I undertraining, and that a device or an approach was able to really help you with?
Yeah, so, you know, for me personally, fatigue and overtraining were major problems that I had as an athlete. And as it turns out, 30% of competitive athletes overtrain at some point in their careers. So, you know, that's pretty high. And overtraining is this, you know, feeling of disillusionment. You're sort of tired, you're run down. It feels very unfair for an athlete who's like really pushing their body. And so that
maybe you're an elite athlete, Lisa.
Yeah, right.
And look, fatigue affects everyone. So that was one of the core questions I had, is like, how could you prevent overtraining? And, you know, in the process, I learned a lot about heart rate variability and the central nervous system and using heart rate variability as a predictor of how restored your body is. And as a result, I made sure that the technology we built could continuously measure heart rate variability.
So that's so interesting, because I think, you know, if you look at the consumer products for fitness, they're measuring things like heart rate, not heart rate variability so much, sleep, some similar, some different. So where does what you do differ from what the consumer products that are out there do?
Yeah, I mean, just on to focus on that specific point that you made, Lisa, because it's a good point, right? Like, measuring heart rate is different than measuring heart rate variability. And when you're building a consumer product, you're getting pulled in a lot of different directions. Like, take the Apple Watch, for example, right? It's a product that does a lot of things, right? It's got push notifications. It's got different apps on it. It's receiving phone calls. And it's also, you know, got some lightweight health tracking. And, you know, because they are doing so many things, it's hard for them to dedicate the resources to having, you know, really, really granular and accurate data from a health standpoint. So for Whoop, right, we don't have a screen on our device. We collect all this data in the background. We're measuring data 100 times a second across 5 different sensors. So it's just a much more granular deep dive on your body. And we're able to do that because from day one, we were focused on solving problems like overtraining, on, you know, trying to optimize performance, unlock peak performance. And the challenge for any, you know, company, any technology, is if you're not specifically focused on one thing, you may have trouble doing a number of things. And so for us, by focusing on really understanding the body and not having, you know, push notifications and other things, we were able to, you know, monitor heart rate variability, for example, whereas other people don't monitor granular enough data to understand that information.
So who's monitoring it? Who's actually watching the data? Is it the athlete and their personal trainer? Is it the team? Who's spending time staring at that data to decide what athletes should play or not play, or how that works?
The coaches and the trainers typically will have a dashboard that allows them to look at all of their athletes. And the way Whoop is designed is to sort of live a step ahead of the athlete or the coach. So you wake up in the morning with a recovery. That recovery is telling you how much strain to take on your body throughout the day. Over the course of the day, you accumulate strain, whether in the form of stress or exercise. In our case, it's particularly exercise with athletes. And then at the end of the day, we look at the strain that's accumulated on your body, and we tell you how much sleep you need for tonight. And so then you go to bed and you wake up, and the hours of sleep that you got in relationship to the sleep that you needed is this notion of sleep performance, and the whole thing resets. So, you know, it's living a step ahead of the athlete. And by sending all that data to a coach, it also allows the coach to live a step ahead of the athlete. So now the coach, before the athlete even shows up for practice, can say, okay, you know, half my guys are really, you know, peaking physically, but the other half are run down. So I'm going to treat these guys who are run down differently. I'm going to give them a different practice plan.
And it sounds like you really are able to correlate. I imagine you're able to correlate the data with outcomes. And the reason it's on my mind is I've seen, you know, the idea of appealing to, let's say, elite athletes and who are looking for every competitive advantage, I think has led to both some really exciting, innovative approaches such as the ones you're describing, but also a huge amount of you know, crap. The I'm thinking about in terms of genetics. I've seen people. There are all these companies that offer. Oh, we're going to give you this genetic assessment, and based on the genetics, we're going to tell you how you should exercise and what you should eat. And it's total crap. It's there isn't a basis for that. There isn't. In other words, people do have real differences, but the evidence that responding to the differences in the specific ways that supposedly the genetics allegedly indicates, with few exceptions, is just crap. However, athletes swear by it because they're looking for an edge, and this sort of gives them, now they have a genetic advantage. So the actual advantage, and there was another version of this that a wellness company used, and the basic idea is it's a psychological advantage. They think they're using science, and the fact that they perceive it as a scientific edge is sort of is what actually is it's
the sentinel effect, you mean? Well, Will, so what data have you got? What evidence have you got? And I know you and I spoke about fewer injuries, for instance, some of the studies you've done.
Yeah, so I mean, a few different categories have been really exciting. I think the first is what we've seen around behavior change. So for athletes who've been on WHOOP for over 3 months, on average, they're getting 41 minutes more sleep per night. They're reporting drinking alcohol 74% less. They're reporting drinking caffeine 65% less.
What's the comparator group?
Say again?
I'm sorry, I just didn't know what the control group was. When you're saying it's this percent more or this percent less, is it sort of pre-treatment or is it, in other words, you can imagine different types of control groups?
Yeah, so when they've been on the system for 3 months and then afterwards. So we baseline how often they record these things, and then we show the results afterwards.
And what does that translate into in terms of things a coach wants to know?
Well, so let me just, 1 second, let me go back to, so there's the behavior change that I think is really interesting. Then we've also seen fitness improvements. So on average, your resting heart rate has decreased by 4.5 beats per minute, and your heart rate variability has increased by, I think, 8.3 milliseconds. So both of those are fairly meaningful fitness improvements. And then lastly, you know, to David's point, the excitement around correlating with performance, we've actually seen correlations between our recovery score and time trials with track and field athletes, time trials with swimmers, and even correlations with REM and recovery and things like field goal percentage, free throw percentage, turnovers for NBA athletes.
Wow.
When you think of all the parameters that you measure, it sounds like you're measuring a number of different parameters with exceptional density. My understanding is often when folks, they start off and do that, and then they're quickly able to figure out, actually, we don't need this density or we don't need all of these. There are a couple of factors or parameters that are sort of driving the predictions. Has that been any of your experience, or do you really need that density and that and all of those sensors?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. You know, I think what we're excited about right now is we are seeing a lot of value in the density, and other people aren't monitoring the body at nearly the density we are. So we're a little bit of a step ahead in terms of how much data we're collecting on the human body, about 150 megabytes of data per person per day. And then we're also, I think, a step ahead in terms of analyzing it. Now, to your point, over time, will there be certain elements of our existing system that potentially, you know, we don't need to sample at so high of a frequency? Most likely, but I think in turn, we'll probably add additional sensing possibilities along the way.
So I think about the NBA playoffs that just occurred. I know the Cavaliers and LeBron James in particular are clients of yours, and they, you know, wiped out my Golden State Warriors there.
Right.
And so I, you know, would they actually go so far as to attribute their success in part to this product?
Well, I don't want to speak for the Cavaliers. We've had a great relationship with Mike Mencius there, who's on our advisory board, and Mike is the trainer to LeBron. And look, I think that in general, rest and recovery and lifestyle are the untold story of you know, pro athletes. Right? Like, you know, you hear these stories about guys like LeBron, guys like Tom Brady, you know, who are clearly dedicating all hours to performance, not just that moment in the gym, but, you know, the way they're thinking about sleep, the way they're thinking about immediately following the game, the work that, say, LeBron and Mike do together, I think is way beyond what other athletes are doing. And as a result, you see LeBron James have this indestructible career for 13 years, going to 6 NBA championships in a row, and his body's not breaking down. You know, that's not that. I think the mistake is to say that he's a genetic freak. I think the way people really should look at it is what kind of lifestyle decisions is LeBron making that makes him so capable of recovering? And he's clearly much better at that decision making and that behavior than a number of other athletes in the world.
Do you have to monitor, you know, freak skin space to tattoo coverage as one of your parameters? Because me, there's a definite correlation there in the NBA. I don't know. So how do you get into these athletes? You know, you're a young person. You haven't been a CEO before. You don't have a track record of doing anything like this. And here you are working with the best of the best. How do you get that? How do you make that happen?
Yeah, I mean, we believed from a very early stage that if the product worked, we'd be able to work with the best athletes in the world. And that's always been my belief, where, you know,
if you build it, they will come. I think you just said that.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you can prevent injury, if you can prevent overtraining, if you can actually deliver on these promises, I mean, we're talking about meaningful fitness improvements for athletes who have been on our platform for over 3 months. And I think the most important thing, actually, is that it's not just the trainer or the coach or their parents telling them, hey, sleep is good for you. It's actually seeing it and feeling it in their data and realizing the effects of lifestyle decisions that they're making in order to find peak performance. So it's in part what Whoop is monitoring, but it's also in part what we monitor in shaping their behavior. And you know, I just don't think that that's something that other platforms have done. And I think that's why we've been able to work with the best athletes in the world.
So who owns the data, Will? I mean, there's got to be a lot of controversy when the data show that athletes are just not up to their, you know, up to their original performance snuff. They're aging from their peak, maybe not worth the contract they just got paid. How do you manage the tensions that arise between the athletes and the teams and management when
data is
in the middle of it?
Yeah, so we like to think of it as an athlete empowerment tool from the ground up. So at its core, we believe athletes own the data. And they're wearing the product. They're often managing the product as it's on their bodies. Now, if they choose to share information with the team, then the team has access to that information. And, you know, we've done a lot, I would say, around privacy settings to make coaches and athletes comfortable sharing data with one another. I mean, I'll give you an example. So, as it turns out, professional athletes are very comfortable sharing everything about their body, but with like one or two people in the world, like very specific people and no one else, right? Whereas collegiate athletes are pretty comfortable sharing sort of a dumbed down version of their data, more summary level data with coaches, with their teammates, with their friends, but they don't want to share everything about their body. So you see what I mean? It's like who you're sharing with and then also how much about yourself you're sharing.
Have you seen any examples where this became controversial, though? Have you seen situations where the data created a problem for the athlete or a new opportunity maybe that they wouldn't have had?
Well, we generally like the athletes to get comfortable using the data before they start sharing it. And we tend to build a good relationship with our athletes as a result. I mean, a lot of our clients are just working directly with professional athletes. So they get comfortable with the data and then they start to realize that it's not, it's ultimately an empowerment tool. If you understand things about how your lifestyle affects performance and all these other people you're competing against don't, like, you have an edge. And in pro sports, like, I mean, 1% is so valuable. Whereas this isn't 1%. This is like, this is like 3/4 of your life that you're now monitoring that you never monitored before.
Right. And I mean, so two things. First, one of the things I think Lisa was trying to get at is, if some of the payment here is from management, in other words, if this is an expensive tool, I imagine that ultimately, like, the Cavaliers pay for, do they have the right to demand to see aspects of the data? Like, if they say, oh, we're wondering, we should we renew person X's contract or not, might they not want to look at the data that they've been collecting to say, hey, let's try to make a quantitative decision about what's the potential that this athlete has, or how hard have they been training, or how diligently have they been doing? Because now you have all this data. The point is, could it be used by the management who's paying for it, as another tool to evaluate the athlete?
I think it will be used as another tool to evaluate the athlete, but I think it won't necessarily be sort of like, is this person good or bad, or is this person like deserve a contract or not? I think it'll be more nuanced than that. I think you'll know, for example, that, your point guard was peaking at this time last year, and now Whoop data is suggesting that they're not peaking right now. Okay, we're going to think a little bit differently about the number of minutes that we play our athlete in the next 10 games. Right? And as a result, then they're going to start peaking at a similar baseline to where they were last year. Or, this in general is what it looks like for starting midfielders, sleep and recovery data going into a game. We want to make sure all our midfielders are at that level throughout the rest of the season. Now, sure, you could say, okay, well, what if they're not at that level? Like, what then needs to happen? But I think that's also where this is an empowerment tool for the player, because they start to understand what are the things I need to do to improve my sleep, to improve my recovery, so that I am at that place. And if you look at the athletes who have had these sort of amazingly long careers, they've gotten an extra 3, 4, 5 years of paychecks. Those are guys that have actually figured this out without a system like Whoop. They just knew that they needed to spend all this time sleeping. They needed to spend all this time in ice baths. They needed to spend hours with a trainer stretching. These are people who have dedicated well more than just the exercise hours to being performance athletes. And so for Whoop, I think it actually empowers those athletes to understand how they can have longer careers and therefore get more paychecks.
So I know in some sports, and I think Major League Baseball, they allow players to wear products like this during the game, whereas in other sports like basketball, it's not allowed. Is that correct?
Well, the Major League Baseball has initiated a testing protocol to be approved during games. So that's something that we're currently working with the league on. I think all the leagues, just to be clear, have legacy rules around wearing jewelry, wearing things on your body that may affect player safety. So I think the leagues are thoughtful in being sort of careful about what's allowed or not allowed to be worn during a game, because you don't want to affect player safety, and you also don't want to affect the game and the integrity of the game. But the key here is that, in the case of Whoop, we're not affecting player safety. And it can be worn seamlessly. So, should it be something that's approved over time? I think so. And in our case,
do you think you'll ultimately see coaches sitting on the sidelines staring at, screens, looking at data in real time, to decide when to pull a player and, and decide when to put somebody in, or, predict an injury is can you predict an injury is going to happen or likely to happen?
Well, so the way we've looked at it is, if you have a lower recovery and your body's run down, your body's more at risk for injury. And we've seen the results where, athletes are reporting 60% less injuries when they've been on Whoop for over three months. So there is data to support that Whoop will prevent injuries. Now, can you prevent the fact that a well-recovered athlete just got his knees taken out from under him, in a contact play? No, right? So there's always going to be those things. But, it's interesting. Like, I think last year I read 80% of injuries in the NBA were non-contact, right? That's a pretty unbelievable statistic. So if there are things that you can monitor to help, ensure that your athletes aren't overtraining, that's not just, that's not a threat to the athlete. That's actually a huge benefit to the athlete, because you're going to protect your athlete.
Do you think that some of this sensor technology and some of this approach will move to actual real-time monitoring? Because, I went to a recent game, Giants, Red Sox game, and, I could see in the dugout, they actually have some, sanction, it's all official, right? Like some iPad, where, players are checking it out, in this case, for the scouting report, I imagine, for the other players. But, when everyone was looking at, what was the latest information on that thing immediately prior to their at-bats, everybody was. It was really interesting how it was just sort of the central object that everyone was focused on. And it really seemed, you could see how it really mattered. And you could imagine that could even go to the next level with what Lisa's saying, if they have actually some kind of physiological data that sort of is able to sense who might not be at some level of performance. Do you see that happening or not so much?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, we have coaches and trainers using the information like that during practices today, where, you know, you're making sure an athlete doesn't take on more load than their recovery would suggest, right? Like, at its core, overtraining is accumulating more strain than your body is recovered. So if you see an athlete has a low recovery, you may want to put less strain on that athlete. Now, there's certainly cases where you're intentionally going to, you know, overtrain, and you're going to do that for a short period of time and then put your body through a lot of rest. That's fine. But if you're dealing with an athlete, you know, over the course of an entire season, I think of strain and physiological information, as an example, as a more intelligent way of monitoring minutes, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
You know,
it's
today,
more relevant.
Yeah, today the logic, say, in the NBA is, you know, so-and-so played 42 minutes tonight. Well, what was the strain they accumulated on their body? Were they guarding someone who, you know, was, you know, just driving them crazy, and were they running around?
Shoots wicked three-pointers from
right.
half court.
No, and you can imagine it in baseball, instead of counting pitches, you know, you might have pulled Pedro Martinez before he, you know, let go of that pitch. So here's another question for you. A lot of what you're describing, while your focus is on elite athletes, I can easily imagine that there'd be a lot of weekend warriors, the people who sort of, Lisa said, you're not addressed, you're not focused on in her introduction, might be even more likely to benefit from something like this, where people, you know, everyone imagines, not everyone, but there's a lot of people who, you know, imagine, and if you look at all the commercials for Nike, I mean, they're making all their money not from selling to professional athletes, but from selling to people who kind of imagine themselves as having, you know, flashes of being like Mike. And the idea of being able to help people not injure themselves, and the idea of being able to have professional level technology, or the perception of professional level technology applied in a sort of personal or consumer setting, is that something that you've given consideration to?
It is. It's something that we're considering. You know, we get a lot of requests on a daily basis from individuals looking to buy the product. You know, right now we have a lot of demand just at the professional level. And, you know, as a startup, you sort of have to tackle one thing at a time. I can say, though, it's something that we're really interested in, and I can see us pursuing in the near future.
So what about thinking about it from the healthcare side? I mean, there's 100 different products out there, various types of wearables and stickables and God knows, trying to measure these same kinds of parameters. But as far as I can tell, nobody's done it at the level you have, the level of sensitivity and specificity that you have. Can you identify health problems in the athletes? Do you see them coming, or can you help them identify bigger challenges than those related to training?
Yeah. So to be clear, we're not you know, an FDA approved device or
right.
system, but you know, we have seen, we have identified people who had, you know, had sleep apnea. We didn't say they had sleep apnea, but their sleep levels were so unusually bad that you know, we recommended seeing a
clinical correlation is suggested. Yeah.
Yeah, we recommend they mm-hmm. see a sleep doctor, and as a result, they found out they had sleep apnea. We've seen there's one woman who had a remarkably low baseline for quite some time, and you know, in looking at her data, we said, you might want to just go see a doctor. And she went to go see a doctor, and it turned out she had mono, you know, because her body was just suppressed. We've seen with an Olympian where she was getting really low recoveries on our platform, and it turned out she had a lung infection, you know, and then got that resolved. So, yeah, and like the lowest, on a personal level, the lowest recoveries I've ever had on the platform were when I had I got strep throat, and my, like, all my statistics just fell off the face of the earth. So it is pretty, it's actually a very validating moment for someone using Whoop when they get sick and Whoop immediately realizes they're sick. So you start to realize, wow, this product actually really understands my body.
Well, it's interesting because we've seen lots of hospitals using Fitbits in, you know, clinical trials and in like cardiovascular recovery programs and the like. And, you know, I think Fitbit, you know, while a very popular product, is not sampling at the level you are. I would think that you'd have an opportunity there to, you know, think about a medical product if you wanted to go in that direction.
Yeah, I think it's something that we're definitely going to consider over time. I think it's, look, just at a bare minimum, it's so important, right? I mean, like, solving our current healthcare industry is so important. And it's not that often where you see, like, just a very obvious solution where you have everyone incentivized in the same direction. Like, the insurance companies want people to be healthier so that the bills go down. People should want to be healthier. What can you do to help people live healthier lives? And I think that seamless monitoring plays a huge role in that.
So I have to ask you, Will, we're getting to the end of our time here, but, you know, since you hang around in the athletic world, if you were going to have a walkout song, you know, walking to home plate, what would your song be? Have you got one figured out?
That's a good question. I would play Queen Bohemian Rhapsody. A little disruptive.
Well, Will, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. It's so interesting to learn about things that are really adjacent to the core healthcare system we normally spend our time in, but have so much overlap, you know, with respect to data and privacy and performance and the like. So really a great opportunity to learn about Whoop, and thank you so much.
Yeah, great. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Today's guest, Will Ahmed, was speaking to us about how wearables can make a real difference in understanding bodies, health, and performance. He firmly believes that fitness should be incorporated into health if we are going to move our field forward overall.
Yeah, I thought that was such an interesting show, Lisa. And I think I'm still a little bit on the fence. What I worry, I think that there's a real opportunity for sort of the precise monitoring. But I also worry there's sort of like an element of two things. One is element of false precision, where you get, this is the value for strain, which we can exactly quantitate. This is the value for recovery, which we can exactly concentrate. And I think my biggest worry for these sort of things is still the extent to which it's sort of psychological. All of these comparisons, just like for the wellness stuff, are comparing someone before and after an intervention. But the real way one of the many ways you'd like to really more seriously do this comparison is you'd like to compare how does an athlete do on the, you know, sort of the algorithm versus a sort of fake algorithm that where they think they're on a real program, but it's not basing it on some measurement, but it's based on some random parameters. So they think that they're really doing it. Sort of, basically what I'm saying is you need a better control to really figure out how to do it, to figure out if it's not just a question of self-selection of athletes who are particularly motivated when they're undergoing the program, and then psychologically are convinced that this is scientifically informed advice.
I don't know if I agree with you, because I think, first of all, what better control for an athlete than themselves? I mean, they either get better or they don't, or they stay healthy or they don't, they perform or they don't. But I think more importantly, the psychological aspect might be really important. I mean, I actually would worry that if the data looks like you're weakening as an athlete and you see that in real time, maybe it demotivates you.
Really interesting.
You know, I think, you know, I know, like when I'm playing squash, which I do know as well as Will, I'm sure, if I feel like I'm tired when I go in there, I play worse.
Wow.
You know, and I think there's a lot to the psychological component of it.
Wow.
We're excited for our next show, which will feature Jeff Clapp. You may remember him from a prior show talking about his company Better. He's going to revisit that story with us, which has had an interesting ending.
And you can follow Lisa Soonan at VentureValkyrie.com, as well as on the Timmerman Report.
You can follow David's writing at Forbes.
This episode of Tectonics is produced by Connected Social Media and recorded in Tectonic Studio B in Mill Valley, California.
Take care.